Today, the economic chickens are coming home to roost. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. I just recorded my recent market and housing update with Alex over at Nuggets News, and this is my version of the show, including some extra slides. Things are interesting at the moment, but there are a lot of cracks are emerging, so it's worth understanding what's going on. I hope you enjoy.
Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News. We're back with our monthly housing and economy update with our friend Martin North. How are you, Martin?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you. And so much to talk about today. We are in weird times, I would say.
We are. I'm a little bit under the weather, but I wanted to still get this show out. So let's jump into these slides of yours.
Let's start with the markets because, bear in mind that 75% of all equity action is in the US. Obviously, what's happening in the US is very significant. And I made a show the other day calling rising volatility out, driving markets lower on tech valuation concerns. So let's just start there. And I think a good place to start is, if you look at the MSCI All Country, that's a sort of a snapshot of the equity markets globally. And you can see they're down off their highs. They've come back a little bit from where they were a day or two ago, but they're still well off. And if you look at the volatility index in the US, we had a bit of a volatility spike over the last few days. It reached 27 at one point. It's back down a bit now, but still higher than it has been. And if you look at the NASDAQ, well, that's off a bit from where it was. Again, it reached new all-time highs and has come back a little bit. We'll talk about why that is in a second. If you look at NVIDIA, for example, one of the Mag 7, that's significantly down and dropped dramatically yesterday. Now, that's because of a very significant development in AI, which we'll touch on in just a second. And the other side of the story there is Alphabet or Google, which stocks shot up again for the same development. So we're seeing now the Mag 7 breaking apart in terms of trajectory and direction, which is quite interesting. And here's the story. What's happening now is that Meta, essentially in talks with Google to buy some of their chips rather than NVIDIA chips. And the fundamental issue here is that the NVIDIA chips are graphic processing chips. So they're actually very inefficient from an energy perspective, whereas Google's chips, they're a different type of chip. They're much more efficient. And so we've now started to see this real interesting battle play out. And it's really begging the question here that on one hand, you've got massive amounts of investment in infrastructure, particularly in data centers. And data centers, of course, they need water to cooling, they need energy, and they need chips. And so the question is, how much of this investment is actually good investment versus bad investment? Oracle's on that list, of course, one of the major players. But Oracle's shares crashed because they are having to borrow big, issue bonds, to fund their investment in AI. So basically what we've got at the moment is the AI story under question, energy, water, which chips, and very importantly, depreciation. So if you think about how much is now being spent, how quickly is this thing going to depreciate? So the whole AI question is now very much in the air.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned those chips. It's an important part, and that ties into a lot of the crypto stuff and computing stuff as well, those different types of chips and specific chip manufacturers versus how the market's become quite monopolized to a few companies in a few countries that can produce these specific chips.
Absolutely. And of course, in the US, there's a concern about what China's doing. There's a discussion about whether NVIDIA will be able to sell some of its chips to China or not. So it's a very muddy story. And there are still people who are dead optimistic about the future of AI, but there are also some surveys now suggesting that some of the AI investments may not actually ever pay back. And this is a very important point because the whole market movement in the last 18 months to 2 years has been this AI story. You strip out the AI story, well, most stocks have gone sideways or down. So it's a very interesting and important point. So we'll see how that plays out. But there's another factor to bear in mind too, and that's the other show that I made. The bulls are getting airsick as reality bites. Why? Because now there's a question about rate cut bets. And in fact, a few days ago, expectations were that the Fed, when they meet in December, would not cut rates further. That's turned around a little bit now. There's a bit more of an expectation. Every time one of the Fed members speaks, you know, if they're positive about rate cuts, markets go up. If they're less positive about market cuts, rates go down. And so you can see how the stock markets are being very twitchy with regard to what's happening. Of course, next year, Jerome Powell leaves his post and a replacement will come in. Who will that be? Maybe a change of policy. Of course, President Trump wants lower rates. And some people in the Fed are saying, well, inflation is still pretty high. And we'll talk about Australian inflation shortly. Australia is still pretty high, which means, of course, the question is, what's going to happen? And markets have been all over the place here, partly because of the AI story and partly because of the rates story. And by the way, just as a postscript, it's worth remembering that if you look at the footprint of US debt, there is quite a lot of debt domestically, but also overseas too. So there are some significant fallouts. For example, if you look at some of the bond market movements, for example, Japanese bond rates have actually moved very high because there's now expectation potentially of higher rates in Japan. That is a pressure on international liquidity, international financial markets. And of course, we've also got other countries, China, are all holding bits of the US debt. And so there's a really important question here, because what happens in the US with regard to their financing of their deficit, which is still growing, has a very significant impact, not just in the US, but globally as well.
Yeah, and that ties into some crypto stuff, which we'll get to in just a second as well.
Well, talking about crypto, of course, I made another show called The Wild Ride to Nowhere as markets bite back. And of course, as I said, markets have come back. But actually, you know, within that, you've got the AI story we've talked about. We should also talk about the crypto story. I've got this pile of Bitcoin, you know, burning in the middle of Wall Street here. Because what's happened recently is a lot of Wall Street players who were big holders of Bitcoin have actually been selling. The ETFs have actually gone into reverse. And so there's something going on here. And the question is, this is just a standard Bitcoin up and down volatility. You know, Bitcoin has been very volatile. And, you know, I got a little bit of an interesting story here between the Bitcoin US dollar. I thought the fact of the matter is we are way down from where it was. But, you know, volatility in Bitcoin is very much a thing. So, you know, should we be concerned? Shouldn't we be concerned? Well, some of the whales have been selling. We also know that some of the miners of Bitcoin need above 90,000 US to be able to make any money. So in some cases, miners now may be losing money as well. But there's another factor as well. You can see there the, 86,000, give or take, it wobbles around a bit, US. Here's the other factor. Is there something else going on here? And I don't know about this, but it's interesting that there's speculation that maybe JP Morgan has gone short on MicroStrategy. MicroStrategy, one of the big treasury operations, of course, has been buying Bitcoin like ever, forever. Buy and hold was their strategy. Well, suddenly it's gone in the opposite direction. And here's the MicroStrategy share price, which is dropping significantly. It's to the point where some people are saying, well, hang on a moment. Actually, now, if you look at the Bitcoin holdings they have and the share price, economically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So there's something else going on. So I don't know what you think, Alex. Is this just a normal sort of, you know, cyclical blip in the Bitcoin story? Or is there something else going on?
Yeah, I mean, with our research, we thought that the market was overextended and we're telling people to take some profits, particularly on altcoins, because they always crash harder, as you know, when Bitcoin was above 110. And our metrics are still pretty bullish. So we think that this is a 35% correction, which is pretty normal in the crypto cycle, and maybe a bit of chop into the end of the year. And then we think it's going to be pretty bullish into next year. And as you say, a lot of that selling was from whales. I think a lot of whales are timing the traditional four-year cycle, but I think a lot of whales are upset that crypto was anti-establishment and now it's being captured by BlackRock and TradFi, as we call it. It's kind of lost a bit of its soul, as we talk about a lot. So I'm hoping that maybe crypto changes direction back to privacy and all that stuff. But it's an interesting time, and I think it's just changed. It's become a mature asset class.
Well, I would argue that a lot of this is because the big financial players have actually been taking positions and actually deliberately trading the volatility. So, you know, let's not get too carried away. But of course, it's also worth noting that the Trump coin and the Molina coin are way, way down, right? But we've still got the US very much aligned to crypto. But there's something else going on. The Genius Act, which is the other big development, of course, this year, it had a very important stablecoin component too. And, you know, this chart here is quite interesting because it makes the point. Everyone thought the Genius Act was about crypto regulation, but actually it's really about something else. And here's the something else, right? What this is allowing them to do is effectively link stablecoins to treasuries to the point where effectively if you want to invest in stablecoins, you need treasuries. This allows treasury to issue liquidity to the market, and maybe that's about 100 billion so far, or will be, without going through the Federal Reserve. So the question is there something else going on here in terms of the future of liquidity in the US? The Treasury coup, how digital asset regulation became America's debt monetization engine. And that's the point, really. Are we actually now seeing a fundamental shift in the role of the Fed, the importance of the Fed, the way that money is created, and the liquidity story in the US? That is the big question.
Yeah, I think it's a Trojan horse for sure to usher in CBDCs and to help offset all that debt, back it with treasuries. And it'll be multiple countries. I don't think it'll just be the US. If everyone goes down this similar route, getting everyone into this blockchain system to trace everyone ties into digital ID. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a wolf in sheep's clothing for sure.
Yeah, and it's worth highlighting that in the Eurozone, there is a digital ID coming and, you know, a few early plays there. And so there is definitely a lot to watch here. But I agree with you. It is a Trojan horse. And a lot of the observers have not understood what this really means long term. Now, talking about what it really means long term, let's move to Australia. I made a show called Australia's Titanic Moment Approaches as Spin Overrides Reality. And look, let's start by looking just at the Australian story with regard to $12 trillion in residential real estate, $4.3 trillion in superannuation, $3.6 trillion in listed stocks, and $1.3 trillion in commercial real estate. But this is the killer. 55.5% of all household wealth is held in housing in Australia. That's very, very high on international comparisons. And of course, in recent times, what we've seen is home prices continuing to bubble higher, despite the fact that maybe, as we'll see, interest rates may not be dropping as far as we thought. Government, of course, promised before the election that home prices would go higher. It seems to be the case. But we've got an economy that is really lopsided. It's very much based on the question of housing. And a lot of people would find it very difficult to get into the housing market, even with the government's interventions and extra support levels. You know, typical loans are now 7 to 9 times income for some people, and that's a big problem. So there's a real problem here. It's a lopsided economy. Oh, and by the way, the other side of the lopsidedness is the Australian government continuing to expand. The Productivity Commission said that workers face paying an extra $300 billion in tax unless there are spending reforms. And the biggest hit would, of course, be to low-income earners. Well, that's you know, the continuation of the process. So we have the K-shaped economy, some people doing very well, some people holding multiple properties, et cetera, but ordinary people finding it very difficult at the moment. And this next slide actually brought it out quite nicely, putting a few different things together. A third of Australian families are food insecure. The NDIS is being pared back to the bone. Welfare recipients face punitive new laws. Meanwhile, the government has committed to spend up to $368 billion to buy nuclear submarines, which may or may not arrive. And that's really the issue here. And in fact, if you want to take that slightly further, if you look at the inflation, CPI versus the wage price index, although, of course, the spin was that everything's fantastic, you can see there that wage prices are not moving up higher than CPI. No, CPI is significantly higher, back to actually 2011 levels in terms of wage prices. So that's a real problem. And we'll talk about the latest inflation in just a second. But I made the point, this is the inconvenient truth about the wage price index. Chalmers called it good news. You know, wages are rising, well, not very strongly, but they're still way below where they were previously.
Yeah, I guess what I'd add to that, Martin, is if with that $300 billion submarine spending or $400 billion on, you know, new chips and AI spending, if you really zoom out, I think it's just another one of those things that show that governments just don't care about their citizens at all when they're rolling out these globalist agendas. You know, how can you possibly be doing that when so many Australians are struggling to afford food and shelter, and the US, you know, violent crime, addiction, you know, all these other things that you should be focusing on? you know, even the millions and billions they're spending on, you know, space or whatever, it's just crazy when you actually stop and think about how the lack of care for the actual populations and citizens.
Well, of course, the issue is that the government spending is continuing to rise. More and more of it is actually in the government sector. If you look at the overall jobs market and jobs momentum, 38% rise in the total size of the public service in recent times. And whilst they've just announced a 5% productivity cut for the public service, we'll see whether that plays out or whether it doesn't. So there's a really big question about can all of this extra spending really be warranted? Is it being spent in the right place? And as you say, is it benefiting ordinary Australians? No, it's not. It's actually objectives aimed at specific things, you know, big defence spending. They want to cozy up to the US, of course. The AUKUS story is, I think, a bit of a crooked deal, and I've always believed that it was very much about benefits to the US but not Australians. And more broadly, the spending is out of control, and, you know, it's going to continue. Now, the question is, what does all this mean? Well, what it potentially means is that with the stronger jobs figures that we saw, the expectation of more rate cuts in this next slide is really off the boil. You know, there's about a 5% chance now of rate cuts in December when the RBA next meets. People were betting on more rate cuts. And it's interesting that the CPI data that came out overnight was actually up to 3.8%. Now, this is the new monthly version of the CPI, but it's meant to be complete. Now we were sort of doing proper monthly, but they'll have to sort of let it bed in over the next little while. But never mind. 3.8% year on year, according to the ABS. Last month, the indicator was 3.5%. And the market consensus was 3.6. So it's above market consensus. And, you know, this is the first time that this new release is complete. But the real takeout here was a piece that we got from Shane Oliver. And he highlighted the fact that if you look at the market price elements of CPI, they're relatively benign. They're sitting around 2%. But the government administered price inflation elements are much, much higher, 6 to 7%. So what it means is a lot of the inflation that we've got in Australia at the moment is actually due to government policy. It's to do with what they did when they were meddling with electricity prices and now they're reversing. It's to do with high government spending. It's to do with a lot of things that the government are responsible for. And that's really the point I want to underscore today. The reason inflation is so high and the reason, therefore, interest rates are so high is because of the government policies over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's a policy-led rate rather than actually international market-led rate.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. And as we've seen, Victoria is probably the worst. What is it, 9 out of 10 people now on you know, government payroll there in some way, shape or form, and that's pretty much communism at this point.
Absolutely. And of course, nobody wants to, you know, spend less. But there's a lot of yak about everything. The housing market is another great example. You know, Claire O'Neill keeps coming out with her $10 billion half, despite the fact that they've hardly built any houses. And, you know, one third, they actually bought houses that have been built privately. So they're actually taking houses off first time buyers prospectively and then representing them as public sector houses. You know, Andrea Bragg's been all over this in recent times. But this chart here just shows you the long-term story. This is the public sector dwelling construction commencements right the way back from 1956, thanks to Greg Jericho for the slide here. And you can see there that houses and other residential, in other words, units, apart from the spike in the GFC stimulus, is way, way down. So basically, you know, the truth is that the amount of investment in public housing has fallen through the floor. And despite all of the government noise, promises, 40,000 homes, et cetera, over 5 years, and, you know, 1.2 million overall, we're not seeing it. And so we have a real big issue. That's one of the reasons why house prices are still looking very bullish, because there is lack of supply. But as we'll come on to in a second, there are other factors here. Now, in all of this, I made a show called Property Markets Slide into Summer. Well, maybe, because if you look at the latest auction clearance rates, which don't tell you an awful lot, they're actually down a bit. And it's fascinating to me that, of course, everyone's still propping up the property market with all of these public comments that are positive, and all of the journos related to the portals are also spruiking property prices higher. But when you look at the clearance rates, you begin to ask it. And actually, Tarek produced a really interesting slide showing the gap between the four-month moving averages this year and last year on clearance rates in Sydney and Melbourne. Now, he's looked at clearance rates compared to listed, sold versus listed. And you can see there that Sydney's significantly sliding now. A definite rise over the July to November period. Melbourne a little stronger, but there's something else going on here. And so, once again, the spin that we're seeing around property is disconnected from what's actually going on the ground.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Moving on to, do you want to explain this one, Martin? Gazumping.
Yeah. So one of the other interesting articles this last little while is in the mainstream media, they're starting to talk about the mechanics of the property market. And there are two things going on at the moment. The first is gazumping, where effectively somebody makes an offer and it's verbally accepted and they think they've actually got the property. Then somebody comes in and offers a higher number and suddenly they've lost the sale. And so we're seeing a lot of people being gazumped. In other words, other people coming in and saying, I'll offer you a bit more. And of course, until you've actually got a contract, there is no legal basis for an agreement at the moment. It's one of the weaknesses of the way that the Australian market works. So that's one factor that the media have been quite strong on recently, quite importantly, because people need to understand the sale process and when actually it's contractually connected. It's a little bit different at auction, but you know, this is when you've got a private treaty sale. The other thing that's going on is underquoting. So this is where effectively agents go to the prospective seller of a property and say, hey, I can get you a big number. But then they actually quote a smaller number to prospective purchasers. They put it up with a lower listing, perhaps as well, to try and attract people to come in. And then these people come in and hope, you know, the agent hopes they're going to bid it up. In some cases, people just are disappointed because price is much higher. It never gets sold at the price that was indicated. So there's a real problem. And in fact, if you look at the next slide, there's a very significant data here for Sydney showing that a large proportion of properties in the Sydney region were underquoted. In other words, the auction price guides were below what actually the story was. And in New South Wales, there are now fines announced for underquoting as the property market heats up, according to the AFR. Fines for underquoting in New South Wales will be increased by 5 times as the state government cracks down on real estate agents' use of misleading price guides in a hot market where buyers already scrambling to secure a home. Now, you know, I'll talk about scrambling a little while, maybe less so, but underquoting very significant in New South Wales, as well as in Victoria. And in Victoria, real estate agents now have to disclose a house's price reserve a few days beforehand so that they're trying to avoid the underquoting thing. Those laws will be introduced. Now, here's 2 points. First, they have yet to be introduced, so it's all talk. But secondly, has to be policed. And the problem we've got with the real estate market generally is it's not being policed. So underquoting is rife. Gazumping is rife. So anybody who's wanting to dance the property game needs to understand the rules of the road, but also understand that agents are not necessarily always doing the right thing for everybody by what they're doing, and they're just out there to get a deal at any price. So there's some really important news here with regard to the development of the real estate industry. It needs better control and regulation. Unfortunately, a lot of people are still being swindled out of money, buying property at the wrong price. And as we'll see, there are other levers that they're pulling as well. So you have to be very careful if you're going to actually play the game.
Yeah. Next up here, private new home sales.
Yeah, just to say that, of course, the supply, it's all supply, is the cry of the building and construction industry. You know, well, just allow us to build a lot more and everything will be fine. If you look at the decline in new home sales, this is according to the HIA, there was significant decreases in Victoria, down 19.5%, South Australia down 11.5%, Western Australia down 5.8%, New South Wales down 3.3%. Actually, Queensland was the only one of the large states to see a monthly 6.7% increase in new home sales. New home sales is not actually moving. Now, why? Because there's not a huge amount of new stuff being started, and the average time to complete a property is double what it was 5 years ago. So it's taking a lot longer, costing a lot more. So that, on the supply side, it's not really the reason why the property market is broken. The real issue, as we've touched on before on the next slide, is migration. So we haven't got updated migration data, but we did get long-term and permanent movements. And guess what? They were higher. And this chart from IFM shows there's a very significant uptick again. So This takes us right back to the migration conversation. A lot of new people coming into Australia, a lot of people coming in with money, a lot of people who want to buy property. And it's very interesting now that, to an extent, people are waking up to the migration question. And in fact, there was a survey done quite recently, immigration intake too high, voters say. And it's interesting that most New South Wales voters believe immigration numbers are too high. And you can see there that they're talking about the impact. A lot of people are thinking, yeah, there's a significant negative impact from immigration and the numbers are too high. And so that's a fascinating, fascinating story. So a lot of people are beginning to wake up to the fact that a bigger Australia is not necessarily good for the people who are here. And then just to add to that, we had Matt Common from the CBA saying that he thinks the migration is probably too strong as well. So you've got this supply demand, you know, migration is one of the levers that we should be looking at to try and actually pull the property market back down. But of course, the government wants more people because it's basically people-related quantitative easing. Basically, it creates more momentum in the economy and more tax take. And of course, on the supply side, well, guess what? On the next slide, you can see here that the building sector still are saying, we need to build 1.9 million extra homes to bring prices back to levels. So the whole idea of being able to build yet more homes, of course, the Housing Industry Association is the mouthpiece for the building and construction industry. They want to build more homes. But the point is, our building capacity is quite limited. We don't have the workers. We can't get the materials. The cost of construction are too high. So there is no way that we can build our way out of this housing crisis. We have to look at other levers, and one of the critical ones is migration.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is that I think it's another deliberate strategy by the globalists. If you flood these people that are, a lot of them are reliant on the government, and it's easy for them to roll out all these new laws and this control system, and no one can really vote them out of power. And you're already seeing that in some particular suburbs or in cities in, you know, European countries now. It's just crazy to watch this all unfold in slow motion where the majority of people don't want this. But again, politicians don't represent the views of the people.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a very, very important disconnect now between the public policy and a lot of ordinary Australians. Another angle on here is if you look at the recent lending statistics, investor lending rose again. And in fact, I made a show called Investor Loans Go Boom. So guess what? Same properties that first-time buyers are now being encouraged to try and buy with a 5% deposit are the very same properties that a lot of property investors are now actually also buying. And so you've got this contention and this battle in the same marketplace between first-time buyers and property investors, who, of course, get tax breaks, who are able to get significant momentum because of their ability to be able to get bigger loans. And if you look at the average loan size for a first-time buyer and for the average investor, they're both up again. So, of course, the banks are benefiting. The banks are benefiting, but ordinary Australians, not so much. Property prices are still going higher. And even with the lack of rate cuts, remember, rate cuts are still, you know, over the horizon, maybe sometime next year, maybe not, depending on who you believe. The truth is that for many people, housing is unaffordable. That's true whether you're wanting to buy. Also, if you're in the rental sector, it's unaffordable. And two-thirds of those in my surveys in the rental sector are still under financial pressure. So there's a real problem. Another real problem just to highlight in the housing is that the building inspection story is one that we want to talk about just briefly. So a lot of people will, as part of a property, get from an agent a small, a very small survey that's done as part of the sales and marketing campaign. And we've been saying for some time, those are not real structural surveys. They don't actually go into enough detail. And now in New South Wales, there's a story here and other places too, that people are actually not necessarily getting the right information when they go buy a property. And the pre-purchase surveys in this article, are basically, they're plagued with inadequate information. And so people are actually making bad property decisions because of the fact that they mistake a marketing document for a serious structural survey. And Edwin and I, in the last few weeks, have been talking with a number of different people, and we've put a few shows out about this, where people bought what they thought was one thing, and then they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of remediation work to do later. So once again, we've got to make sure that people understand the industry is rigged, and it's rigged against prospective purchasers.
Well, another industry that's pretty divisive is this renewables, Martin, with the wind turbines.
Yeah, so of course, the question about power and the future of energy is a very significant factor in Australia, and people are actually beginning to suggest that, well, maybe this renewables push, which of course is still quite costly when you think of the cost of the wires and poles, are extremely expensive relative to what people thought they were. And we've blown a big hole in household budgets because of the high cost of energy and power. But there was another factor that I wanted to link here with another thing I'm very passionate about, because they found that now asbestos is being found in Chinese-built wind turbines. Now, my wife died some years ago from mesothelioma, which was an asbestos-related disease. So I'm very passionate about raising awareness of asbestos. And can you believe that in the middle of this renewables revolution, quote unquote, asbestos is now being found. Mesothelioma is a horrible disease created by exposure to asbestos. And any exposure to asbestos, however small, is a risk. And on that front, let me just add that it isn't just wind turbines, but it's actually a lot of other sources too. And this next slide just makes the point. There are about 29 different places in a typical house, particularly an older house especially, where you might get exposure to asbestos. Many people don't know about this. So when you buy a property, check for asbestos. And it's also worth highlighting the fact that even some newer properties, because they're importing sheeting from China, where asbestos is still allowed, you can actually still be bringing asbestos into newer properties. So it isn't just old properties. And it's also interesting to highlight that in some parts of the world, there are now legal cases with regard to talcum powder, which also contains asbestos, and even makeup, which contains asbestos. And of course, in recent times, we had Canberra sand, so play sand in schools, with massive amounts of asbestos also being found. So there's a really big story. And again, I've spent a lot of effort trying to raise awareness of asbestos. I've engaged with politicians on asbestos, but nobody wants to talk about it because this is such a big, risky issue. And there were some settlements between some of the big manufacturers of asbestos products and governments earlier on, a few decades ago, to pay some compensation for some exposure. So nobody wants to rock that boat. But the exposure to asbestos is still happening. A lot of people in DIY are being exposed, as well as, the wind turbine story. This asbestos story needs to be spoken about. This is really, really serious.
Yeah, well, as you say, my kids' school was just one of all the ones that have been closed around Australia as they found out about this play sand. It's just crazy to think. And again, it gets back to we need local communities because otherwise you just don't know what is actually in anything, whether it's medical or, building materials, as you say. Once you get back to that, the local communities and knowing who you're dealing with directly and taking out these corporations that are profit first, all this stuff that we talk about, I think that the world is heading back in that direction because of all these issues that keep arising.
Yeah, and it's worth, I think, underscoring that more than 2,000 people are still dying every year from exposure to asbestos. The trouble is, it's a long, slow gestation process. So you can be exposed, as my wife was, years ago, but eventually will catch up with not with everybody, but with some. So it is important to take the right steps on the way in. I always say to people, think asbestos. Let's just quickly highlight a couple of other really interesting little developments this time, which again is just talking about craziness. The ATO has now launched a crackdown on holiday home deductions. So new draft rulings from the ATO may significantly reduce the deductions that holiday homeowners can claim against rental income from the property, limiting to advertising, cleaning, and other costs directly related to earnings that the rent might be generating. So there's a really big issue there because a lot of people are using second homes as a tax play. Well, maybe no longer. That's important. And the other interesting little spin here is fascinating to see that a lot of people are talking about building more properties, but actually the properties that are actually booming at the moment are the bigger properties for the wealthy downsizers. This is a little article is talking about wealthy downsizers flock to hotel style units. Prices here start at 1.9 million for two bedroom homes, while sub penthouses are priced at 4.2 million and penthouses will start at $8 million. This is the problem at the moment. We're building the wrong type of property, and this sort of structure, where of course the developers potentially get tax breaks as well, is actually warping the property market further. And that's something I want to highlight in terms of actually we're not building the right properties. We're not building stuff that people need to be able to afford. Actually, the upmarket area where, of course, the margins are still stronger is where a lot of the action is. I've got a problem with that at the moment. So that's another important point. So when you talk about the number of properties, you got to ask about the mix of properties. Final point. Interesting to look at the bank's share index. The Australian bank's share index is significantly down from where it was. And, you know, I highlighted the AI story coming off the boil. Well, the bank index in Australia is also one to watch. And CBA, of course, if you look, has dropped from, 176 plus to about 153 at the moment, which is, I think, very significant. And that's because people are now beginning to realize that some of these banks really are not really doing the right thing by their customers. They're still effectively lending stuff they probably shouldn't lend. They're pushing the regulator to try and actually reduce lending standards, although the regulator has been saying, no, actually, the investment lending is too strong and maybe we should be a tightening. So interesting ahead to see what happens there. But I just want to close with this little last slide. Bendigo and Adelaide Bank, their shares dropped. Why? Because they've actually been revealed to be still doing money laundering and some very important regulatory breakdown there. And the question I've got is, are they alone or are other banks in Australia still not doing necessarily the right thing? So there's a real big question now about the quality of our banks and the quality of their share price. They're still lending like billio, but not necessarily, I think, on good terms. And, you know, going right back to what you said, the big corporates are ruling the roost. The government's actually not doing the things that they should be doing for ordinary Australians. So it leaves us a bit out on a limb.
Yeah, well, the show I just uploaded was about the big four Aussie banks being served. You mentioned the smaller banks there, corruption, money laundering, all the stuff we've seen over the years, the slaps on the wrist. And yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of this story at all, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think it's worth highlighting again, you know, the banks were the darlings for a long, long time in Australian share market terms. We don't have a huge big tech sector, but they're coming off the boil. I don't think they're going to recover anytime soon. I do expect tighter regulation on the banks and maybe even lending regulation tightening. That in turn could actually then dent the property market. So maybe property is also going to be a bit wobbly ahead too. So interesting times as we go into the end of the year. And I guess next month we'll be able to review the MIEFO and all of the government spending plans. We'll see about that. And I think the next year or two is going to be really interesting. But it comes back to this issue. Unfortunately, a lot of big corporates and a lot of governments are not actually doing the right thing for ordinary Australians or their ordinary citizens around the world.
Absolutely. Well, guys, links to follow all Martin's work and my socials down below. And thanks as always, Martin, and we'll chat to you again next month.
Cheers. Look forward to it. Take care. Bye-bye.